right now I'm joined with Robin Allen, who's an economist, who recently did a very interesting study into the Northern Gateway Pipeline and kind of the straight economics of it in her analysis of it. So, Robin, so why did you decide to study the economics side of the pipeline?
Oh, well, that's a really good question. It was actually my son that asked me, you know, what did I think of the project? Because we live in British Columbia, and obviously it's of great concern here in terms of the environmental risk and the risk to Aboriginal land claims. And I said, well, let me look into it, because as an economist, my perspective would be, naturally, do the economics stand up? Because if the economics don't stand up, then why would we put the environment and rights at risk? So I started to look into it, thinking it would take me, you know, a day or two to kind of get a handle on it. But here we are, months later, and a major report. And, you know, when I started looking into the economics of it, I was absolutely shocked with what I was finding out about what this project is intended to do. And what it's intended to do is to raise the price of oil on every barrel of oil produced in Canada every year for the next 30 years by at least $2 to $3 a barrel, over and above what it would be without the project.
Wow. I mean, that sounds very counterintuitive to what you hear about this from the supporters of this. So could you explain how that works with why the for this project, why the price of oil per barrel has to go up? So explain the economics of that, also in the most layman's terms as well.
Well, yeah, and you've got to understand, even with my background and experience, as extensive as it's been, I was absolutely shocked to see this, what I would call a perverse market outcome. You know, you'd think that building a transportation system, which would get resources to market, would have the effect of lowering overall prices for consumers, because we'd call it productivity, and when you have productivity, it's supposed to lower costs, and that's supposed to translate in a market system to lower prices. That's not the case with this project. The intent of this project is to get us on the Asian demand curve for oil and take us off the North American demand curve. Now, I'll explain that in a bit of layman's terms. Northern Gateway is premised on, Enbridge is saying, we're going to produce the same amount of oil with or without the pipeline. So they're using a supply forecast 10 years into the future that says we're going to produce oil and it's going to grow at about 4.4% a year in volume. We're going to supply that to the U.S. and Canada in the absence of Northern Gateway. And just one point I'd like to make is, we keep hearing about only one export market. Well, a lot of crude oil is used in Canada. So there's actually two markets that the industry has, Canada and the U.S. So they're going to restrict supply to Canada and the U.S., and they're going to take that supply and they're going to send it to Asia. And when they do that, their premise is that because prices are higher in Asia, because that economy is growing so fast, and they're willing to pay more for the oil, that when they access that market, even with 525,000 barrels a day, that when they do that, that's going to raise the price of oil on every barrel in Canada and the U.S. that Western Canada sells. Because what the market does is it goes to the highest price. And the argument is, if everybody's not willing to pay that higher price, then we'll just sell the oil to people who are. And as a result, they can command the higher price in Canada. Secondly, when you restrict supply, we know price goes up. And that's the other way they're going to be able to raise price. So that's how they plan to make it happen.
It is such a head scratcher. So why is it that there's so? I mean, from what you're saying to what other people are saying, that there's a huge discrepancy.
There's not a discrepancy. Enbridge has confirmed that this is indeed their plan. There's no debate about what I'm saying in terms of what they plan to do to make this project work.
When did Enbridge confirm the rising of the oil prices and that? So when did they confirm that?
Oh, after my report was tabled with the National Energy Board as evidence, they were asked by a journalist and confirmed that, in fact, that is their case. So when I started out to do this, I said, look, I'm going to do it from a classical economic perspective. I'm not going to worry about the very important environmental costs or other issues. I'm going to take their case and say, what have they said they're going to do, and how have they said they're going to get the benefits to the Canadian economy? And in looking at that, the conclusions in my report are simply from their case. I haven't said anything new in terms of what they intend to do with the prices. They intend that this will happen and that Canadians will bear it. What hasn't happened is they haven't, for almost 2 years, whether it's Enbridge or the oil industry or our political leaders, no one has thought it important enough to tell Canadians that that's the intent of the project and that that's how the benefits come.
Okay. Now, I mean, you also talked about, you know, the going into the Asian demand and putting it into the Asian demand and curve for oil. Now, what are the, are we talking just specifically Chinese companies here that would be controlling this, or what?
Well, that's another interesting facet of this, because when I looked at the economics of the case, I wanted to see how the project was being funded and who was going to be shipping oil on this pipeline and who was going to be owning the pipeline. So there, just by way of background, 90% of the oil reserves in the world are owned by governments through their national oil companies. So state-owned companies have been established by most countries in the world that export oil or that produce oil, have established what we would call crown corporations. So they're national, state-owned companies. Now, in Canada, in the last 4 or 5 years, Chinese national oil companies like Sinopec, PetroChina, China National Offshore Oil Corporation, three of the oil companies in China owned by the Communist Party of China, have bought up a lot of oil reserves in Canada, almost $20 billion worth of investment in the last 4 or 5 years. Now, those companies have the right to produce oil, crude oil, and two of those companies are now directly or indirectly involved in funding Northern Gateway Pipeline. For example, Sinopec put up $10 million to help fund the regulatory process. And because they put up that money, they're able to have an equity ownership in the pipeline. And once, so they're going to be shipping on the pipeline, but they're also going to own the pipeline. And China National Offshore Oil Company, through MEG Energy, also has production ability for oil, and they will be shipping on the pipeline, according to their funding agreement. So what you've got set up here is the possibility that the Chinese government will have oil being produced in Canada shipped along the pipeline, which they are part or even majority owners of it eventually, and then they have their own tanker ships coming into Kitimat shipping the oil to China. So there's really not any value added resulting in Canada. It's complete control over the process. And they're doing that because they want to get the oil to their refineries to keep their people employed and to keep control over the value added of this project.
So, Robin, you talk about the energy security. So how is this Northern Gateway Pipeline, how does it differ from something, let's say, like Manitoba Hydro?
Manitoba is able to charge its population a lower price than it exports the energy for. So, that's, and I'm glad you raised this, because we got the same situation in BC. We have a two-price system for energy for hydro.
Okay.
But for some reason, we're not allowed to have it for oil, which means when the price goes up internationally, the price goes up for us. But as far as electricity goes, because Manitoba Hydro is a crown corporation, it's able to protect Manitoba residents the same way as the Chinese companies are protecting their residents over in China. So we could end up actually, paying more for our oil here than they do in China, because they're protecting their residents, their citizens. Just like Manitoba Hydro protects its residents. by having a lower price for its electrical energy. Because it's a Crown corporation, it's got the ability to not have this situation that I'm talking about develop.
Mm-hmm. Now, in what we've talked about so far, there's also an aspect in that in raising these oil prices and all these other things that you also kind of point to how this would in fact create more of an economic downturn in Canada, in, as far as companies having to lay people off because of the increase in oil prices. So could you explain that a little bit too?
Sure. The interesting thing is that in explaining how the Chinese government sees the importance of having access to the crude oil in the ground, then having access to transportation systems, then putting it into their own refineries so they can upgrade it and sell it to their consumers. So this is the supply chain or the value-added chain, or sometimes it's called vertical integration of companies. They see that the value lies in being able to have the rights over all stages from the ground to the consumer. In Canada, we haven't acknowledged that benefit. So we have a situation where oil companies produce the oil, but there's no relationship directly to making sure it's refined or upgraded in Canada. And that's where the jobs are. The jobs are in upgrading and refining. They're not really in taking it out of the ground. So what can happen here in Canada, and I should make one more small point, is that in China, they have a system of price control, so consumers actually don't pay the world price for oil like we do. Secondly, they have subsidization of their refineries because refinery economics are under a lot of pressure. But you see, it doesn't matter so much if you control it from the ground to the car, to the gas tank, because you can cross-subsidize your activities. But in Canada, we haven't acknowledged that benefit. And so what we have developing here is, if the price of oil goes up, which is what Enbridge is intending for it to do, higher than what it would be without the pipeline, is that it costs our refineries in Canada more for their crude oil. And hence, their profit margins are reduced. And that means, or else they pass the price on to consumers, which means that's how our price goes up. And so we find ourselves in a situation where if you take this down to the long-term picture, refineries can't compete in Canada against refineries in China that are subsidized. Hence, they close down. When they close down, where are we going to get our gasoline from? Or where are we going to get our asphalt from? Or where are we going to get our jet fuel from? We may end up in 5 or 10 years importing finished products made from the crude oil that we're exporting. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, what you just outlined, I mean, that to me sounds like a third world economy.
Absolutely. What we're doing is we're dumbing down our industrial development in Canada for a couple of bucks a barrel, coming back to producers, many of whom aren't even Canadian companies. They're companies owned by China, but Statoil is owned by the government of Norway. Total used to be owned by the government of France, but now it's a private company. A lot of these companies don't have any real loyalty to the Canadian economy at all. So why would we anticipate, given that, you know, they're trying to make as much return as they can for who they respond to, and if their shareholders happen to be the Chinese government, they're going to answer to them. So it really is dumbing down our economy. And once those refineries close, they don't open up again. And that's the major problem. But also, when, let's say, the refineries don't close down and they pass these higher prices on to consumers, then we have other industries in Canada that are suffering, manufacturing, agriculture. You know, 40% of the refined products produced in Western Canada go to the agricultural sector. Hmm. If those prices go up, our farmers are going to face a lot higher prices, and that's going to mean they're less competitive on world markets. So why are we essentially robbing from one sector of our economy so that the other sector can have higher bank accounts, when in fact we could have a strategy that says, let's make everybody win out of this natural resource pool we've got?
Right. I guess a point that you kind of went that we're I mean, we're certainly talking about, but I want you to kind of talk about it a little more overtly here, is this notion of, you know, I've heard it, I think, from Oliver, one of the conservative ministers, talking about how this will diversify the Canadian economy. So, I mean, could you talk about how this is sort of like the exact opposite of that?
No, it will not diversify the Canadian economy. What's being suggested is that by exporting to China, in addition to exporting to the United States, we will diversify our export market. That's what I think they're suggesting.
Mm.
What's not correct is that Canada has two markets currently, Canada and the United States. From east of Ontario, about 100% of the oil that's used in those refineries are imported. So Canada may export oil, but we import almost 50% of the oil we use. And we import it from markets in OPEC countries, and then from markets like Norway and Mexico that are declining in production. Now, since we import from, I believe I said import, we import from those foreign markets. Now, OPEC and the other markets that we import from for Eastern Canada are exactly the markets the United States and China are so afraid of. They keep talking about needing energy security, and that they're afraid of their vulnerabilities and uncertainties on the Middle East and other countries that whose volumes are declining. Well, why is our Prime Minister so concerned about the United States' security of oil supply? And then when Keystone doesn't go forward, he shifts his attention to Asia and says he's so concerned about Asia's security of supply, when in fact half of our demand is from those same markets. So I think the attention should be focused on Eastern Canada, not Northeast Asia. And that the attention should say something like this: we are vulnerable and we're facing uncertain markets and paying high international prices in half our country. And they're suffering from higher petroleum product prices. How do we get security of supply and get the oil that's being produced in Western Canada to Eastern Canada? And as we do that, we can take some of the benefits from value added, some of the benefits that everyone else in the world seems to see when they produce oil. We can take those benefits and we can apply them to the Canadian economy. And as a result, standard of living, income, our vulnerability on our exchange rate, all of those negative consequences also get mitigated. And we end up having a diversified economy in a meaningful way.
In a meaningful way. Also, with all this, I mean, I think an interesting point to all this is also my understanding that, I guess this isn't a question, more of a statement, but my understanding of it, too, is that Canada doesn't have a national energy plan or program, correct?
Well, I would say you're correct, because what we're being told is that the federal government wants to rely on market forces and the forces of supply and demand. And that if the market functions, therefore, it will end up being this desirable policy. The problem is that this is not a situation of market forces. This is not a situation of free competition. When you have a situation, for example, of three huge companies out of China owned by the government of China where they essentially represent an oligopoly. And an oligopoly is simply a market system where there is relatively few players, and each of them have a significant amount of control in the market. Well, what happens in that situation is the most effective way those companies can operate is to collude, and it's called a cartel. And that what we have developing in Canada is the power of a relatively few number of operators that are going to control the supply. And they're going to control the price. And when that happens, it's not free market forces. So we have what's happening in Canada. Our energy policy is indicative of market failure. And we have a significant market failure when Canadians can't even access their own resources to stabilize their economic reality. And I think, unfortunately, and you asked me, you know, kind of why I had to do this report. Yes, I was answering a question from my son, but it became clear to me that the public interest that Canadians expect to be protected has been ignored by our federal government and the government of Alberta. And in the absence of effective care of the public interest, it becomes totally borne by individuals like myself that have to come forward and say, hang on a second. We're not being told the truth. We're not being told the whole story. And until we are, we can't make informed decisions. And so I say, you know, thank goodness we have a National Energy Board review process where evidence gets tabled and it has to be examined in an open forum. Because right now, our national energy program is not in the interest of Canadians. It's the interest of the oil industry in Canada, which is increasingly being sold offshore.